Welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Alice Bradley, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker, and today I'm joined by our video producer, Tahsin Haider. Hi, Tahsin.
Hi, Alice.
Tahsin, this week we are tackling a problem that we all have, which is time management.
We are, and I'm actually really excited about this because guess what? I could use the help.
Seriously, sometimes by the end of the day, I don't understand what I've been doing with my time and why nothing has gotten done. Which is why this week we're getting help from Tiffany Dufu, founder and CEO of The Crew.
I constantly ask myself what I call my drop the ball question, which is a fill in the blank of what matters most to you and your highest and best use and whatever the thing is.
Tiffany has served as president of the White House Project, was a launch team member of Lean In, and was named to Fast Company's League of Extraordinary Women. Currently, Tiffany is CEO of The Crew, a peer coaching platform for women.
She's also the author of the book, Drop the Ball, Achieving More by Doing Less, which is a combination memoir and how-to for time management.
I'm really looking forward to talking with Tiffany because she's also a working mother, and I'm just ready to be a sponge to take in all of her advice.
What do you need help with, Tahsin? Where are you struggling?
Well, the biggest one is overcommitting myself. I just have way too many things on my to-do list, and the list grows, and I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere, and then I go to sleep really late, and it's just a cycle that keeps repeating itself.
Yeah, I feel that. Also, like, it's hard sometimes to get to go to sleep earlier because you want that time to yourself, right?
There's such a struggle between me time and like the like necessity of actually sleeping for your body's well-being.
Yeah, that's probably a topic for another day, but that's huge.
Huge. How about you, Alice? Are you good at managing your time?
You know, no, I'm terrible at it. I have this to-do list that is just growing every day, and I just keep just changing the date on it and bringing it to the next day, and never seem to make any headway with it. I also have a really hard time delegating, which is something I really need to do in my job. And I mean, I really do have to drop the ball sometimes and hand it over to somebody else. I really struggle with that. It's really hard. I feel like I should just be able to do stuff, and I'll just do it all. And it's not possible.
Totally. And it's also so like guilt inducing because
yes.
When you feel like you're not, you know, when you're not running errands, there's like a guilt associated with that. But then when you're not there for the people that, you know, you love because you just can't kind of get grips on your time, it's really frustrating.
I think that guilt is really something we all fall victim to, especially now that we're home and we feel like we need to be able to do more because we're not commuting, right? We're not dealing with that part of our days, but it's actually harder to get everything done.
Yeah, no, I think already I felt a crazy obligation to be available to everyone all the time. I'm one of those people that's, you know, in the sandwich generation where I'm taking care of a young little, 22-month-old and elderly parents. And you just feel like social media, friends, I mean, quarantine, you just feel as though you have to be available to everyone all the time.
Yeah. Oh man, same. I feel you on the whole sandwich thing. I'm just, woof. We could probably talk about that for hours, but I think if anyone can help us, it's going to be Tiffany.
I really hope so. Let's get to it.
So Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit, first of all, about your book, Drop the Ball.
The title is Drop the Ball, Achieving More by Doing Less. I wrote Drop the Ball because I used to be a person who was terrified of ever dropping a ball. I used to think that dropping the ball was a terrible thing to do. It basically meant that you were failing to take timely action, that you were being irresponsible, that you were letting people in your life down, that you were letting yourself down. In my case, as dramatic as it might sound, I was letting down the entire Black race, as in, if I mess up, they're never going to hire another Black person again. So I, like many people, had a life-changing event that caused all of the balls in my life to come crashing down. So it wasn't as if I came up with some amazing philosophy on how to drop the ball. My life-changing event was the birth of my first child. But I have connected with so many women for whom it was a diagnosis or, you know, you finally get the job of your dreams and discover that it's a lot harder to be the boss than you thought it was going to be. For many people right now, it's, you know, a viral epidemic and an economic disaster and a social uprising that's causing people's balls to drop right and left. So, you know, when it happened to me, I actually had a very incredible awakening, which was a discovery that even with all the balls on the floor rolling randomly, the world didn't fall apart. Armageddon didn't hit. In other words, all of the things that I was always paranoid would happen if I ever dropped a ball didn't happen. No one ever called to say they didn't love me anymore, or that they weren't going to be my friend, or that they were going to disown me from the family because I didn't text them back, or because I missed, you know, an event. I didn't get fired from my job. And so I decided to really dig into why is it that I feel so much pressure to keep all of these balls up in the air to begin with. And that led me to basically reappropriate the term. So for me now, dropping the ball is a beautiful thing. It means that I've released these unrealistic expectations that I have to do it all to begin with. And then I figured out how to get clear about what matters most to me and how to meaningfully engage other people in my life so that I can create one that I'm really passionate about.
You know, I think you really hit on something about talking about those fears, right? Of like, no one's going to love me anymore. There's something about that, like really figuring out what's behind that overachievement mindset, figuring out what those fears are is really important, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that digging into that really is the first step. You know, one of the exercises that I love to take people through is an exercise in which you really look at the roles that you play in your life. You know, it turns out that all of us are born into our lives playing certain roles. If you were assigned girl, your first role was probably daughter. If you were assigned boy, your first role was probably son. All of us become friends, students. If we have siblings, brothers, sisters, wives, fathers, husbands, you know, citizens, immigrants, whatever the roles are. And because we're all ambitious enough, we by default put the word good in front of all of our roles. And we strive to be not just a daughter, but a good daughter, you know, not just a good worker, you know, a worker, but a good worker. And if you ask people to just pretend that all of their roles are job descriptions and to kind of curate a job description, it's a really powerful exercise. And so I often ask people to just answer two questions in relationship to their roles. The first is, what does a good ex do? What does a good mom do? What does a good boss do? And the second question is, how do I know that that's what a good ex does? You know, in my good sister role, I'm the oldest of four girls. So in my good sister job description, there was a line that used to say, you have to respond to your little sister's text messages like within 2 minutes, right? I'm sure there's one coming up soon that says I need $100 or, you know, or something like that. And that is really the first step to coming to the realization that even though we like to imagine that we are in the driver's seat of our own lives, that the expectations that we have of ourselves don't originate with ourselves. When you ask yourself the second question of how do I know, usually it's there's someone in your life when you were growing up. For in my case, it was my mom who I really modeled myself after. And so it was what she did. You look at popular culture, you know, television. I grew up on The Cosby Show. So I was basically going to be Claire Huxtable when I grew up. And if you deconstruct that character, she basically had flawless makeup, flawless, perfectly feathered hair. She walked into every room with this beautiful Eileen Fisher kind of flowy purple thing. She had five perfectly well-behaved children. They were pretty much all college-bound. And in the second season of her life, she made partner at a law firm. Now, I don't know how many women you know who have five perfectly well-behaved children that also made partner at a law firm. But I can tell you now that I'm an adult woman, it's a pretty rare occurrence, you know? And so that's really the first step, I think, which is why that's such a great point of really getting a handle on where does it originate? Where does the pressure come from in order to be able to do something about it?
After you figure that out, what do you think is the next step? Is it like prioritizing the important things? Like what would you do next?
Well, I would back up. I think it's really getting clear about what matters most to you, separate and apart from what mattered to the advertiser who created that commercial that makes you feel that you're not a choosy enough mom if you don't choose Jif. I think it's really deciding not just what aspects of your life are important or that matter to you. I often ask people, like, what matters to you? And people usually rattle off aspects of their life. My career matters to me. My family matters to me. What I try to coach people toward is, what do you hope to achieve in relationship to what matters most to you? You know, for me, it's advancing women and girls. That's my life's work. That's what I'm here to do. My career matters. But if in the end I haven't advanced women and girls, for me, that it wasn't a career that was worthy of having. Certainly my marriage is important to me. But what matters most is that I'm nurturing a healthy partnership. That's what matters most to me. My kids are important to me. Parenting is important to me. But what matters most is that I'm raising conscious global citizens. That's what I hope to achieve in relationship to my parenting. And once you have clarity about what matters most to you, you begin to create a filter for what you should actually be focused on and doing that's really rooted in the next step, which is getting clear about your highest and best use in achieving what matters most to you, instead of just saying yes to everything that comes over the fence. And your highest and best use is pretty much a combination of what you do very well with very little effort, not because you are a prodigy, usually because it's something that you've just done over and over again, combined with what are the things that only you can do that would be either callous or highly irresponsible to delegate to another person. And it's the combination of those two things that allows you to really be able to create some kind of filter and focus. So, for example, one of the things that I do really well with very little effort is help other people to achieve clarity through guidance and encouragement. As some people say that I should monetize that and I should actually be a professional coach. One of the things that I feel only I can do in relationship to my kids is to instill values in them. I feel that it would be callous or highly irresponsible to hire someone to instill values in my kids. I think a parent should do that. So my highest and best use in raising conscious global citizens is to engage my children in a meaningful conversation each and every day. I'm effectively my kids' coach. Okay, I'm their coach in chief, whether they appreciate that or not. What kind of day did you create for yourself today? Who did you laugh with today? Okay, if an alien came from outer space and abducted someone from your Fortnite game today, you know, who would they have abducted? Why would they have abducted? You have to get creative when they become tweens because they don't want to answer your questions anymore. Who would they have abducted and why? And in that way, I can hopefully help them to develop a positive relationship with themselves, with their peers, with the people around them. It's very helpful because in the good mom job description, I can tell you there's lots of things that society tells me I should be doing. Usually for a good mom or a good mother, it involves a lot of physical presence. There's a lot of expectations that require a physical presence. Well, I'm the founder of an early stage startup. I work a lot of hours. I'm not able to be physically present as much as society thinks that I should be for my kids. But I know every day that I'm an extraordinary mom, not just a good mom, an extraordinary mom, as long as I take the time to have that conversation, even if I've worked, you know, a 14-hour day. And so that's part of how you start to create the filter of what balls can you drop versus what do you really need to hold onto, because that's going to really help you to achieve, you know, your goals and your aim.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
today about time management. And what it sounds like you're saying is you should sort of know your purpose, right, in life, your kind of higher purpose, and look at the day's activities through that lens and figure out how you're serving that purpose in your day. Do you look at your like to-do list that way? Do you pencil in or pen in, you know, teaching my children values today? How does that work in your day-to-day life?
Yes. So it manifests in multiple ways. So the first way that it manifests in that is that I've done away with to-do lists altogether. I personally can't use them because I don't have enough discipline to account for the reality of the world. You know, it's a 24-hour day. There's 7 days a week. It's time boxed. And yet my to-do list never factored in the fact that I'm one human being and there's only 24 hours in a day. What I would end up doing is just keep writing. I would keep adding to the to-do list. And then I would keep beating myself up and feeling terrible that I wasn't getting everything done. Even though rationally, if I looked at the list, it probably wasn't humanly possible to get everything done on the list. So I use my calendar as an accountability mechanism for myself. When something comes over the fence, I add it to the calendar. I create a calendar invite for it. Even if it seems like it's something silly, like don't forget to go to the post office or go. It's like, I put it in the calendar. That is an accountability measure for Tiffany, because if I can find no place for it in the calendar, then it forces me to do a reality check about whether or not this is something I need to go ahead and say yes to, whether or not I need to tell the person who might be inviting me or involved, I'm not able to do this, or to go back to someone else who I might have already committed to say, I know I said yes to being on this committee. I know I said yes to reviewing this book. I know I said yes to being a guest on this podcast, but now something has come up and I need to change that decision, which is one of the hardest things for people to do, is to actually go back and renegotiate, or to say, or to drop the ball on something you already committed to do. And I just want to let everyone know it's possible to do that. You can change your mind. Your schedule can change. Your priorities can change. It's completely fine. So that's one of the tools that I use now. You know, we're a bit quarantined. We're a lot of us are in our homes now. So I have other practices, using candles and boundaries and all kinds of affirmations, and just to continue my well-being. But one of the biggest is using my calendar as my to-do list.
You talk a lot in your book about finding your village, and especially in quarantine and with everything going on, there are so many relationships that also take time to nurture. And I'm wondering, how does one go about finding their village to help them on their journey?
Well, first of all, I think it's incredibly important that we all have one. You know, I was on the launch team for Lean In, and one of the things that I like to say is that we were never meant to lean in alone. You know, everyone needs scaffolding. I think in this environment, it's particularly important to communicate to the people around you what your limitations might be, what balls you might have needed to drop in order for you to be a good anything, so that there are no hard feelings, especially because we're all working a tremendous amount. I think knowing the different types of people that you need in your life for any one period of time is really great. So for example, I'm an entrepreneur. I just raised a round of capital for my company. In order to raise money, I needed to engage my current investors as stakeholders and really get them engaged in helping to make introductions, in back channeling, in circling. And so that was a group of people that I brought very close together. But one of the things that I think is also important is that we all have a bit of a peer group, peer mentorship, if you want to call it that, that's really supporting us and helping us move forward. And it's part of the reason why I founded a company called The Crew, because there were so many people who understood the value of having a peer group, but just didn't have the bandwidth to find and cultivate and sustain that kind of network. And when you layer in on top the fact that we're not organically showing up at a cocktail party or event these days, having someone that you can just give some information to about yourself and to have them match you, which is effectively what The Crew does, I think can be really beneficial. So, you know, ultimately, I think that whether it's The Crew or not, if you have a group of people who, one, are holding you accountable, you know, to your goals and your ambition, and you're communicating that to them, you know, having a diverse group of people that come from different backgrounds, different industries, different perspectives is really important. And that there's a bit of objectivity with these individuals, you know, that they care about you, but they're not actually invested in your decision making, which is why sometimes, you know, your partner or your friends may not be the best crew members, you know, when they're really invested. It's just so important in order for all of us to grow and thrive. I'm the cumulative investment of a lot of people who have poured themselves into Tiffany Dufu. That's why I'm here.
I love this idea because we just don't think about finding people who aren't necessarily in our circle of whether it's our career or our lives or, you know, looking outside of that, those small kind of insular circles seems really important to me.
Yes. Sometimes we do have, I mean, a lot of crew members have circles, but they may not have circles that are not as invested. And so being able to show up to a group of people who don't have the backstory so that you can really curate a new reality for yourself, I think can be really incredible.
Yeah, I feel like especially since getting out of like college and grad school, your group kind of gets smaller and smaller. And because they get smaller, they get more invested. And so it's really nice to have kind of that objective point of view again.
Absolutely.
So now that we're all quarantined, right, it is so much harder to plan out our days. And you talked a little bit about setting boundaries. I'd love to just hear how you're doing that in your day-to-day life. You've got kids, you've got a startup, you've got so much work, you've got, you know, you're being podcast interviewed. How do you establish those boundaries and that structure to your day?
Yes. So I have a lot of practices. One is that I surround myself with things that nourish me. So I have a bowl of fruit that's sitting right here. I have lavender oil that's sitting in, you know, my drawer that I take out multiple times a day and put on my wrists and take some deep breaths. I use affirmations. I grew up in a home where every day my mother told me, Tiffany, you're so smart, you're so beautiful, you're so loved. She was constantly using affirmations in order to encourage me. And so I use them to help me set boundaries. So for example, I have an affirmation here that says 12:30 is the new 1 a.m. I wrote this because I was having a hard time getting to sleep at a decent hour. I was basically getting in the bed at 1. I was trying to say, oh, I'm going to go to bed 2 hours earlier. Well, you got to do baby steps. So I decided to make 12:30 the new 1 a.m. At 12:15, my alarm goes off. It's a song. It's Tina Turner's We Don't Need Another Hero. And that is my signal to get my behind in the bed. I have another affirmation that says, you are your present, because I was having a hard time just remaining present. I was feeling so much anxiety about what was on my calendar for that day, what I hadn't got done, what I was supposed to be doing, that I decided, Tiffany, if you can just focus on the present moment, that would be really important. You are your present, as in you are your gift, but also it is within your agency to stop at any time. I think it's pretty incredible and have kind of taken advantage of the fact that we have one room that's serving multiple purposes. So this is my studio. It's my bedroom. It's my gym. It's my office. It's a playroom. It's like one room is all of these things. And so I do set sensory boundaries. One of my crew members taught me how to do this. So when the room converts to something else, I'll, for example, at the end of the workday, light a candle. When the candle is lit, that means that this is actually my bedroom. And I also open the closet door. So you create these, you know, moments for yourself and boundaries for yourself that help signal I'm moving from one place to the next. And then you communicate, you know, to other people around you. I think especially if you have children, you know, in your home. And of course, it depends on the age of the kids too. Everyone who has tiny children like deserves a gold medal. Right now, in the midst of this, I'm not sure how they are doing it, but I just want to know, my heart is going out to you right now in this moment, because there's just a unique demand there if you are physically responsible for another human being. But those are some of the ways that I'm just making sure that I'm taking care of myself, which for me is a huge part of time management. It's what I'm doing to force myself to slow down and remember that I need sustainability in order for me to achieve my highest purpose.
Mm-hmm. Tassine, how are you doing it?
So I have a 22-month-old that is sleeping behind my wall. And, you know, it is such a juggle. It's such a juggle. And I really feel for you. I'm also really struggling to get to bed on time and trying not to overbook myself. Because, you know, when you do have kids and when they're little, there's so many unexpected things that happen to you that throw off your schedule. So, yeah, it's fun and it's crazy, right? But I'm definitely going to try the candle. I love a good candle.
Also, I love a diffuser. I have a diffuser in here and I put evergreen essential oil in it in the morning. And it's like my signal that the day is starting.
Yes.
My little recommendation to you.
I really, really love your affirmations. And I know at the beginning of this, you kind of mentioned, you know, the two questions that you should always ask yourself. Are there other questions that you ask yourself most often to keep you on track and keep you going?
Yes. There are exercises. You know, one of them is an exercise that was made popular by Stephen Covey in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is a funeral visualization exercise. I think right now it's so prescient because people are literally losing their lives right now. And so reflecting on what you would want a family member, a coworker, a friend to say at the end of your journey as they're potentially eulogizing you. You know, I'm so inspired right now by the transition of John Lewis and our celebration of his legacy. What do you want your legacy to be? It's such a fascinating exercise to stop and do and reflection to do whenever you're mired in all of your to-dos. Because at the end of your life, you don't want people standing up saying, well, you know, she got a lot of things done on her to-do list. You would want someone to stand up and say something more impactful than that. And so it immediately gets you out of the trees and into the forest of why am I here to begin with? Another question that I'm constantly asking myself, so like, what would I want people to say at the end of my life? But also on a very practical kind of daily basis, sometimes it's moment to moment, I constantly ask myself what I call my drop the ball question, which is a fill in the blank of what matters most to you and your highest and best use and whatever the thing is. So I might get an email from someone who's inviting my daughter over for a sleepover, like in the wake of this pandemic. And I think to myself, Tiffany, is responding to this email your highest and best use in raising a conscious global citizen right now? Is it, Tiffany? And I'll be like, no, it's not. It's like, okay, you're going to move on. You're going to move on to something that is. And, you know, it's like yoga. It's a dropping the ball is a practice. You know, you build up your muscle, you build up your stamina, you build up the flexibility such that I don't have to actually say the question all the way out loud. I can just start, Tiffany is, and then it's like, yes or no, and I can move on. But that keeps me accountable. It keeps me in check and it keeps me disciplined around the practice of not giving so much of myself away that eventually there's nothing left. That's what I'm trying to ultimately do.
Well, Tiffany, thank you so much. This was great.
Oh, thank you for having me. You guys are awesome.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And now it's time for Upgrade of the Week. Every week we talk about one tiny thing making a big difference in our lives. Tiffany, what's your upgrade this week?
My upgrade this week is that I live across the street from a park in Harlem. And I've decided that in between meetings, instead of just going to the refrigerator and grabbing something, which is what I've been doing, that I'm going to put on my tennis shoes and go walk around the park. And it's been amazing.
Wow, even in this heat?
Yes, even in this heat.
Wow, I have not been outside today, so I tip my hat to you.
I've done it 3 times today.
All right, you're inspiring me. I got to get out there.
But it only takes me 12 minutes to walk around.
Okay, that's pretty good though. All right, Tassine, what's your upgrade?
Well, we have finally, at least for this round, gotten my daughter sleep trained, which has been completely life-changing. She would actually put me to bed, is how it would work. We'd fall asleep together, and I would come drowsily out of her room at some point in the night. And it's just so awesome. We finally got to a place where she wasn't teething, wasn't sick, and there was nothing else. And we're like, we're just going to try it. And she's been going to bed with her stuffed animals, and we just lay her down and we say goodnight and we walk out, and she's okay. And I have like 3 hours back in my life.
Oh my God.
Congratulations.
That's so huge.
Thank you.
Seriously. Oh my God. I remember those days. Whew. And now my son is 17 and he may not be awake yet. Actually, it's 3:39 a.m. So.
And Alice, what is your upgrade of the week?
Well, I have been getting into adding bitters to my seltzer. I used to do this as a substitute for like having a drink at the end of the day, but then I was like, this is actually delicious. I'm going to have it all day long. So I've got grapefruit bitters, I have cherry bitters, I have orange bitters. They're all delicious. And it's really given me a little pep to my drink. It helps me to drink more water during the day because, you know, water is kind of dull. But if you add a little soda and a little bitters, it's exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Brad Fisher.
Please rate us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review too. It'll help spread the word about the show. And don't you want to spread the word? You can also reach us by calling us at 347-687-8109 and leaving a voicemail, or write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at Lifehacker, on Instagram at lifehacker.com, all one word, and on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.